Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. I'm Chris Wilmerding, your host. The show is a series of conversations with business owners about their beliefs and values and which beliefs and values they want to share with the next generation. If you want to be a guest on the show, simply wait until the end of this 20-minute segment and we'll provide a link. Simply sign in at that point and we'll be in touch with more information. Now, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Legacy Podcast, and I have a very special guest, Josh Cantwell, of CEO of Freeland Ventures. So, Josh, I'm going to ask you the hardest question you'll probably have to answer, but tell me a little about you and tell me about your business.
Oh, thanks, Paul. Appreciate you. Appreciate you having me on and giving me the opportunity to share with you and your, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of members of your audience. Listen, man, I'm a long-term investor. I invest in apartments. That's, to me, what's helping me build my legacy from a financial perspective. I'm a father of three amazing little kids, and that's another legacy for me, is to take care of them and have a huge impact on their lives. Happily married for almost 15 years, and I'm a pancreatic cancer survivor, and pancreatic cancer has just an 8% survival rate. And so every single day that I get an opportunity to just wake up and live and be a part of the world and share and learn is an additional day of opportunity and legacy that I probably shouldn't have. So, you know, in a nutshell, investor, pancreatic cancer survivor, father, husband, you know, and fund manager, that's who I am. And that's what I'm excited about.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Me being the kind of father of two, I can relate to that. And then, you know, my mom has dealt with cancer as well. So you can kind of, I can see that perspective of just wanting to squeeze out every moment, every second of life while you can. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
You bet. You bet. Yeah. It's important, man. You realize, you know, when I was diagnosed, I was 35. I was healthy. I was, you know, at the time I was a gym rat. I was, you know, probably 7 or 8% body fat, super thin and lean, you know, father. My wife was expecting, she was 8 months pregnant. Oh, it's the last thing you would expect as a 35-year-old. And so you kind of take life for granted, man. You really think that you're, you know, somebody that can just take on the world and live forever and, you know, indestructible. You probably feel that way when you're certainly in college and in your 20s, but at 35, I definitely felt that way. And the world has a fancy way of changing plans on you and changing your long-term vision. So I have a very short-term way I look at life now, which is day by day, with the hope that I get to live a long, long, healthy life from here on out. But, you know, one day at a time, and I make the most of every single day that I'm given. That's the blessing of what cancer has given me.
Mm-hmm. When your wife was pregnant and you were going through that whole process, did Freeland Ventures exist, or where were you at in as far as career cycle?
Yeah. You know, at that time I was definitely a real estate investor, but I was not investing in apartments. I was not really creating legacy wealth. I was very transactional in my real estate investment business. I owned a real estate brokerage. We had realtors. I was flipping houses, doing wholesaling. We had a big income. We ran a seminar business. We had thousands of people attend our real estate investing seminars, Vegas and Dallas and, you know, all over the place, Scottsdale, but all very transactional, Paul. And I think that's probably one of the blessings that cancer gave me, is I completely started to rethink about what I was doing and what I was building. And I thought to myself, listen, if it doesn't throw off from an investment perspective and from a business building perspective, if it doesn't throw off perpetual cash flow, I'm no longer interested. So, you know, a good friend of mine, he had been involved in Fortune 500 companies and private equity companies. And we were talking in kind of a mastermind event and session. He said, look, Josh, you know, these companies are valued based off of long-term contracts, you know, contracts they had that were not month to month or transactional, but they were yearly, and the longer, the better. 2-year contracts, 5-year contracts, 10-year contracts, they were valued longer. And he said, look, you got to lock things in. You got to lock in cash flow. You got to lock in, you know, deals longer term, and your company's going to be worth more. And I really started to think about that a lot. And so we started doing a lot more commercial investments, longer term investments that would allow us to create longer term cash flow. And then now, if it doesn't cash flow for me, if it's not a legacy play, if it's not a long-term play in business, we don't do it. We don't do it. No matter how big the opportunities, even a development deal, for example, we could develop a new street or a new bunch of houses and flip them and sell them or build them and sell them. We're not interested. And I had a friend of mine that just put up a post on Facebook just the other day, really resonated with me, that said, you know, if it doesn't cash flow, it's a job. So these are all things that I learned, not just recently, but really over the last 10 years since my cancer diagnosis. And, you know, I probably sacrificed, frankly, Paul, probably sacrificed a lot of income, you know, 4, 5, 8 years ago that I could have made because I was making these longer term plays, these legacy plays. And now, fast forward 10 years, those legacy plays are created millions of dollars, tens of million dollars of equity for me and for my business. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in cash flow and perpetuity, because cancer made me think about life in a totally different way. And if I couldn't leave it to my kids, if my employees couldn't leave it to their kids, if my partners couldn't leave it to their kids long-term, we weren't interested, right? So huge, you know, just shift in mindset because of getting away from transactional work to really create something permanent.
I applaud you for that, primarily because, especially in real estate, there's a lot of shiny objects where you can definitely maximize profit in a short-term period. So how did you develop the discipline to stay the course and said, you know what, I am going to focus on long-term legacy? Because it could be tempting where business isn't in a straight line. There's ups and downs. How did you cope with the idea that you're leaving a lot of money on the table?
I think honestly, Paul, it was because I knew it the first time I did it wrong. Right. When I was ripped away from my business because of this pancreatic cancer diagnosis and my son was being born. My son also had some challenges when he was born, had to have a pretty major surgery as well. I didn't work for 9 months. And so I realized the cash we were hemorrhaging at that time and looking at my business and my bank accounts dwindling fast. I knew I did it wrong the first time. So every temptation there was in the second time around to do things for that immediate splash of income or that immediate splash of a deal. And you were right, Paul, like they're all tempting. Like they're very tempting. Some very short-term trades that we could make that are hugely profitable. Every time we stabilize an apartment building and we could sell it and yank out millions of dollars of profit, there's the temptation to sell it versus refinance it and hold it long-term. So I think I always lean back on that lesson from 10 years ago, which was don't be transactional, hold for the long-term. You know, real estate is something you buy, hold, and wait, right, for the long haul. But the temptation is to exit now. And so I think I lean on that lesson. I think the second lesson, Paul, again, from a very personal perspective is, my father just passed away. It was my first great entrepreneurial mentor. He built an employee benefits company up to 40 employees. But when my dad passed away, he had lost most of it, through one person that ended up going to federal prison, who stole money from 25 different companies, my dad being one of them. And my dad having to sell his company for peanuts. And I looked at that if I had just continued to invest for the long term and diversify at the same time, that wouldn't happen to me because I saw what happened to my dad and I saw how he kind of lost a lot at the very tail end of his life and just recently passed away. So my dad's legacy for me was the lessons that I learned watching him, the things he did right, the things he did wrong, the things that he was happy about, the things that he regretted. And I think that my dad had wished that he had diversified and not just put all of his money back into his own business. I think, Paul, that's one of the lessons I could give to your audience, because I know there's a ton of business owners that listen to this podcast, is a lot of them are probably tempted to constantly be reinvesting into their company and eventually sell their company for a windfall. That's a great idea, but that doesn't always happen. And so if you can take some of the money off the table, diversify into other things that cash flow, like real estate, then they have the opportunity to create a second stream of income, a third stream of income, a fourth stream of income, and still sell their primary company for a windfall, but not rely just on that one trade of selling their business for a windfall. If that doesn't happen, my question for your audience would be, what other diversification plays, what other incomes have you created along the way in case your business doesn't sell in one massive trade for a windfall? And also, Paul, even if they do sell the business for a massive trade and they exit the business, what are they going to do with the proceeds anyway?
Yep.
They're going to have to reinvest it for passive cash flow anyhow. So those are some of the lessons I've learned. None of them I learned on purpose, Paul. It was all just through life. It was through me getting diagnosed with cancer, following my dad's footsteps. You know, so I'm fortunate in those ways.
There's a lot that goes there. There's so many different dynamics, especially what you said, where business owners, a lot of people in our audience are thinking, okay, let's work for the next 25, 30 years and then hope that the multiplier works out and hope that everything... all the math adds up and it's perfect and you're not going to pay as much in taxes as you thought you were. So right. I get it. Now, based on kind of your overall career, if you were to look at some of the decisions you made, what would you say is your best business decision that you've made?
You know, on top of investing for the long term always, I would say I've got a fantastic business partner. His name is Glenn Lytle. And I've got another partner, Tyler Brummett. I think over time, I've constantly seeked to level up my partnerships. I think in any larger business, you're going to have multiple partnerships. You're going to not only necessarily a partnership in your company, in your LLC or your C Corp, but partnerships with vendors, partnerships with your staff, keeping key staff and making them some sort of minority partner by giving them a little piece of equity or a little piece of stock. I've had multiple partnerships that have worked out. I've had multiple partnerships that haven't. And I do think that if you're going to scale your business in any significant way, and scaling your business means you're able to scale your whole life, right? You're able to take more luxurious vacations. You're able to own more luxurious houses and go to amazing places and afford bigger things. A lot of it happens through your investments in business. Scaling my business by constantly be seeking out the right part. When I was much more immature, Paul, I used to just look at, again, a very transactional partnership or a transactional vendor agreement to say, how much money can I make right now versus how much, you know, is this a person or a business, an affiliate or joint venture partner that I want to be in business with for the next 10 years? And when I started to seek that out, I started to not go into business with people that were, again, those short, shiny object opportunities that could make a lot of money today versus, do I want to work with this person for the next 7 or 10 years and really create something substantial, create something that that's not going to be a lot of drama for me, not a lot of turnover for me. Mm-hmm. And so I've been very fortunate to have 5 or 6 people in my business today, now that I've had in my business life for the last 7 to 10 to 15 years. I have several employees that have been with me 14 years. My CFO has been with me 13 years. My partner, Glenn's been with me 7 years. And we've created an amazing business together. And again, I think it's about not being so transactional and constantly having this long-term mindset, not just about business, not just about investments, but about relationships as well. Mm-hmm. And I've cut off and pared back those relationships that I thought were transactional and that didn't have a life to them versus before, I would have pursued that for the short-term gain, knowing that that relationship might not last more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. As I've gotten rid of those, not that they were bad because they were good people that could have made a lot of money in the short run. Again, my life has expanded. My net worth has expanded substantially. The amount of drama in my life has gone down. The amount of cash flow in my life has gone up. And so not just about the long-term investments, but the long-term investments in relationships.
Mm. Now, it's a lot to take in. There's a lot there.
I'll tell you, because there's a constant appeal to just make a short-term trade or a short-term hire. And man, I've done that. I've done that dozens of times and it just hasn't worked out, man. So it's something that I deal with on a daily basis to think, nope, it's a great short-term opportunity. Can't do it.
Now, what would you say that was your best decision? What would you say is your worst business decision that you've made?
You know, it's probably not vetting out opportunities. It was probably not digging enough, not asking enough questions, because just about every decision that I've lost money on, you know, it was, I didn't ask enough questions. I didn't go deep enough. I didn't ask the third party, you know, references. I didn't dig into those. I trusted people too quickly. My wife still tells me, you know, be careful. Don't trust people too quickly. And she's right. You know, she just really wants me to, you know, dig in and really understand those kind of relationships again. I also think that, look, man, every time I can take cash flow and reinvest it for more cash flow is a great decision. And the wrong decision is to take cash flow and spend it, or to, you know, to spend it frivolously, or to, you know, to buy something that I don't need. I think we all, again, the short-term pleasure of a short-term purchase versus more long-term cash flow. That's ultimately what creates legacy, legacy relationships, legacy wealth, legacy cash flow. And so, you know, I have to underwrite now. I underwrite a lot of deals. I underwrite a lot of apartments and apartments that we buy. And I've learned to be a very, very good underwriter. And so I think the mistakes that I made was not in underwriting relationships, underwriting people, asking enough questions, asking the next question behind the question that everyone else is afraid to ask, that I used to be afraid to ask, that I just ask now because I don't really care. You know, if I upset somebody's feelings because I'm going too deep, then, or if I'm taking too long to make a decision because I'm doing my due diligence and I'm really hardcore underwriting, whether it's a person, whether it's an investment opportunity, I'd rather underwrite and lose the deal because I took too long than to be transactional, do the deal, and then be like, oh crap, man, we bought the wrong deal. We're in the wrong relationship. How do I get out of it? Right. So I think the people that really truly make legacy decisions and have built a legacy business, they get a couple decisions right because they underwrote them and they really went deep and they've got them right. And it changed their life.
It reminds me of that quote. It goes something to the extent it's conflict delayed is conflict compounded. So it's either you tackle the problem now versus, you know, finding out later, and it's an even bigger problem now. So,
yeah. Look, man, I'm unwinding like two business decisions that I made 5 years ago or maybe 7 years ago. I'm still unwinding those. So I know what that's like, right? So I had a private equity fund that we started, we built, it was fantastic. But when COVID hit, you know, 18 months ago or whatever, we were doing private lending out of a fund structure, and we decided to wind that down. And so 18, 20 months later, we're still getting loans paid off. We're still giving investors back their equity, all that kind of stuff. Right. So, and I'm making zero money from it right now. And so, and then, you know, I did some deals with a family member got in over their head, and spent that money in a bad way, basically, didn't misappropriate it, but just basically got in over their head and spent the money that I didn't know. And so, you know, we're winding down those deals, and those deals, some of them are losing money. And so I'm going to have to take profits from one business to shore up those other deals. And I'm okay with that. I know that now. But those deals happened 3 or 4 years ago, and we're still making up for those bad deals. Now, thank God we have lots of other cash flow equity profit from all these apartments. It's not a big deal. But again, you take a relationship that I probably should have done more due diligence. I should have done more underwriting, found out what was going on behind the thing that was going on behind the thing that was going on. And I would have been better off to not having done those deals to begin with. They made lots of money for 3 to 5 years, but now the wind down process is painful. And so again, like I probably should have dug a little deeper. If I had done that, I'd be spending more of my time doing revenue production and relationship development instead of winding down a couple of things that happened 5 years ago.
Have you always had a general sense for, well, let's back up. a lot of what you talk about is cash flow and money and figuring out passive income. How would you define your relationship with money? Like, what, when you think of money over the years, how has that changed, or have you always had that same point of view?
Oh no, it's definitely changed, Paul. I think it's a fantastic question. It's definitely changed. You know, I used to look at money as something that almost like a mountain that I could stand on and beat my chest for how much money I made and how much money I had. Now none of that matters to me, you know, especially being a cancer survivor, I could care less. But what I do care about is the money as a tool, as a legacy builder, as a tool to support numerous charities, as a tool to create passive income for my kids and my grandkids, as a tool to support my single mother, because my father passed away. And, you know, I could care less, you know, about driving the expensive, you know, cars. I've always wanted a Ferrari. I can afford many of them. But I'm never going to buy one. Like, you know, unless it gets to the point where I'm like, okay, let's just get one. But I used to think like the Ferrari was the goal, right? Selling a business or selling, doing a deal in order to have the car was a goal. That was like the flashy car. I think, Paul, in a weird way, part of me still has this very immature, like boyish, sense of approval that I want because of, you know, the friends that I wanted when I was younger that I couldn't have because they were too cool for me. I was kind of a popular kid, but not the most popular kid. There were girls that I wanted to date that, you know, that wouldn't give me the time of day. And money was a way to prove myself. Mm-hmm. A very immature way of thinking, probably up until the time I got cancer. And since then, you know, it's become a totally different tool. It's just an asset. It's a way to create cash flow, to create freedom, to do the things that I want to do and support the things that I want to support. And so money can be very deceptive, because if you build it for the wrong reasons, it can be very fleeting. It can be gone in a second, versus if you care for it, if you know why you're building it and building it for the right reasons, which is to care for other people. It's a tool to give back. It's a tool to take care of people that you love and even people that you don't know, through those legacy cash flows and legacy equity. It could be an amazing gift. And that's the amazing thing about it, Paul, is I think it's about perception of money. And my perception of money back in the day was very transactional, very fleeting, very short-term, very materialistic, and it was all gone. Poof. Mm-hmm. Like that. And now, to some degree, we're not bulletproof, but we've got a lot of armor, right? Because we've built it for the right reasons. We've built cash flows and equity and buildings and assets for the right reasons. And we've built and signed long-term contracts with residents, long-term contracts with vendors. We've got a lot more armor. So we're not bulletproof. Nobody is. But we've got a lot more layers of armor that you'd have to get through before you take us down. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear how the psychology of money changes over time as you start to figure out your goalpost. Originally, the goalpost is to be popular, to, you know, be that person standing on the money mountain. But now it's more of, you know, fulfillment, legacy, affecting other people. So do you have any stories of just, you know, in regards to how money has allowed you more freedom, like what you're able to do now that you've been able to build such a successful business?
Yeah, Paul, I think, look, man, it's about choice. Like, you know, we have enough apartment assets now and enough cash flow that I could just focus on the portfolio we have, never buy another asset, never worry about doing another deal, raising another nickel, syndicating another apartment, and just, you know, continue to stabilize the buildings that we have and live off the cash flow that it creates. I'm 45 years old and could essentially be retired and be done, financially independent. That's not what I want to do because, you know, my father always told me, Josh, look, he reminded me when he was alive, he's like, you were given way more, excuse me if I get caught up here, but way more talent, way more motivation than, you know, than you deserve. And when you were spared for a reason. And so in the second half of your life, Josh, your job is to figure out why you were spared and then take that and use that for the greater glory of God. That was what my dad would say. And he would say, look, you know, you were spared for a reason because God could have taken you. 92 out of 100 people who are diagnosed with the same disease that you are gone. Why are you, Josh, one of the eight? Mm-hmm. And I still struggle with that, right? I still struggle with that. And so I think about that all the time and just think like, well, if I'm hopefully here for a long, long time in this second opportunity that I have, what does that mean? Like, what am I going to do with that? What am I going to really do with that? Because every day I should really not be here, right? And so when my dad challenged me with those kind of words, it's like, hey, man, what are we going to do today? And some days I do nothing. Frankly, Paul, I haven't done much today other than this podcast. I coach club volleyball. I love it. My eighth grader and my sixth grade, they're girls. And then I have a son who's in fourth grade. Girls volleyball is like the coolest sport ever, right? And I coach it voluntarily in the fall. And then I coach club volleyball in the winter. I get paid for it. I don't get paid much, but I do it. And I do it because I love it, man. So like to see these kids, especially young girls, absolutely like dominate and crush the volleyball. I'm going to get emotional here. It is electric. Mm-hmm. Last night, we had an absolute bloodbath against this other team, this other school team, the eighth grade girls. They're super talented. We were super talented. Our gym was absolutely packed with people. The gym was electric. It was loud. Like that was an amazing experience that these eighth graders will never forget. It's a form of legacy. Well, I was emotionally spent today.
Stomach in knots.
These girls are 13. Like I shouldn't care this much, but I do, right? It's my little Juliana and all of her buddies. And I spent today, man. I couldn't really get out of bed. I got out of bed, got them off to school, but I just haven't like been in it today as far as business-wise. Mm-hmm. Because I was so in it last night. Like our whole team was so in it last night. And so, although today I might not be super duper productive, I feel like we made a memory, a legacy memory last night for those nine girls and their family and friends, and even the other team, because the gym was so loud and so wild for an eighth grade game that everybody in the gym will never forget that experience. Like these kids 25 years from now will remember that. And so business-wise, the goal is how to create enough cash flow and enough equity in business that I could do that kind of stuff in my personal life more and more often. Mm-hmm. That's what it's really all about. And, you know, again, the immature part of me thinks, okay, how can I create those memories, right? It's the selfish thing, like I want credit for it. But I realized it's not really what it's all about. So I got to step back. I got to take a breath and realize like, I'm just a tool. I'm a conduit. I'm a way, both in business and in these personal experiences, to help other people create massive memories. And if I can do that, that's what legacy is in my life. That's what legacy is all about, because these people will remember me 40 years from now when they're older. They'll be thinking about their eighth grade year and they'll think about last night.
Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, when you think of your own legacy and the legacy you want to leave, what are your thoughts? Like, how do you want to be remembered?
Look, man, I think the very first thing I want to be remembered as my father's son. My father has just had a huge impact on my life. When my parents, friends are around, I want them to remember that. Like, I'm Paul Cantwell's son. That's number one. I'll never forget my dad sitting with me. I met this girl down in the Virgin Islands, and we had a relationship for about a year and a half. And I was young and immature, and my dad sat me down, and my dad said to me, son, is this a relationship that God would approve of? And he might as well have just reached across the table and punched me in the mouth, right? And so that example not necessarily about relationships, but the fact that he had the guts, so much conviction in what he believed, that he was not afraid to ask the question, right? That to me is a legacy question. That to me is a legacy moment. That so, like, if I could be remembered and do the things that he did, right? And not in a disrespectful way, but in a respectful way, ask the right questions and make people think, like, that to me is a huge legacy he's left for me. Certainly, I think that the investments that we're making in these apartment buildings and mobile home parks and self-storage buildings and those kind of things is going to allow me the financial legacy to leave this money and leave these assets behind to a lot of people and for a long, long time. That's important because cash flow definitely makes impact easier. But, you know, when I look back, I think it's going to be about, you know, really driving relationships deep. And one of the things my wife has said is, Josh, how come your buddies never really reach out to you? You're always the one reaching out to them. How come in business, it seems like you're always the one that's making the outbound phone call? You're always the one driving the relationship. And I think legacy is about connection. It's about connecting people. The last night with this volleyball game was an opportunity for me to connect an entire community, a community of, you know, this is my kids go to Catholic school. So community of Christian Catholics together at a sporting event, both us and the opponent creating a memory, a connection. My buddies getting together from grade school and high school that I'm still close with 40 years later, somebody has to be the connector. And they have to do that on purpose. And so I reach out to people, text people, call people, send cards, send gifts at the when they're least expecting it. Because I want part of my legacy to feel like, you know, Josh kept people connected. People that otherwise probably wouldn't have seen each other, wouldn't have talked, wouldn't have met. They connected and they stayed together. And ultimately, look, when they're putting me in the ground, I would love to think back that all these things that I've worked on, there'd be hundreds, thousands of people there to say that Josh Cantwell had an impact on me. And I did it on the second half of my life that I wasn't even supposed to have.
It gives me chills, Josh.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I mean, there's certain experiences in my life, certain connections in my life where, you know, there's that one person that kind of is the glue to everything. And, you know, it's a special feeling to be part of that, to be part of that connection. And there is very, very few people that realize that they have that talent and realize that they have that calling. So, inspiring, Josh.
Yeah. Thanks. I think it's a choice. You know, I think it's a choice. I think everybody has it. Some people more than others, but I think all of us have the ability to make the extra phone call, to make the extra text message, to send the random gift, to invite people. Like, look, that gym was full last night. I'm not here to pump up myself, but I will tell you that gym was full last night because I sent the emails to the other coaches. I sent the emails to the football teams. I reached out to some of my own friends, family, invited them to come. And so I just wanted to be a tool that could be used so that everybody else could come together. So much so that one of the parents that I'm not even really that close with, not that I'm not friends with them, but I'm just not close with them. She sent a text message to late last night, like midnight, and said, like, please, eighth grade, go slow. Like, I love this team. We've only been together for like a month or 3 weeks, and she already feels so connected to the team, the school, the gym, last night's experience, that she's already saying, like, I love this team and I don't want it to end. And honestly, Paul, I didn't have to do that much extra work to get people to the gym and create this experience last night. I didn't, it was a couple extra phone calls. It was a few extra emails. It was a few extra text messages. So I would encourage your audience to think about this. As they're building their businesses, they're building their families, they're building their lives, they're building their legacy. Don't do it alone. Don't do it by yourself. Bring people with you, even people that are disconnecting from you or people that you don't think you have time for. Have somebody even on your team, your executive assistant, your executive coordinator, invite, have them become a connector, a co-connector with you. I've got a co-connector. Her name is Jen Pennington. She's my personal assistant. She's our director of operations. She's a co-connector. So she's constantly inviting people, whether it's a live event, whether it's a webinar, whether we're sending out free gifts, we're loving on people, because I can't do it all by myself. I don't have the time. A lot of business owners don't. And so I would challenge you, if you don't have that time to do the connecting, find someone else who does have some time and bring them along and have them co-partner with you to be a connector. That's real legacy. Regardless of how much money you have or don't have, anybody can do that part of it.
You already answered my question, which was, what advice do you give our audience members to leave a legacy? So you read my mind.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I would say to Paul, just add this, is own the asset. Right? Own the asset, whether it's a business, whether it's real estate, whether it's cash flow. If it doesn't cash flow, it's a job. Own the asset. So outside of the connectivity, is own as many different cash flowing assets as you can, right? Compounded cash flow is the eighth wonder of the world, right? And that compounded cash flow, building additional equity, will allow you to leave a larger financial legacy. But the truth is, you can be a jerk, you know, and leave a financial legacy. Nobody cares about those guys, right? You have to be the financial legacy and the personal legacy together, by being humble, by being creative, by being a connector, and making smart investments. That's where it's at.
Well, Josh, this has been phenomenal, phenomenal. I love hearing your story. Where can our listeners find you, and where should we direct our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Just go to our main website, which is freelandventures.com. And everything is kind of there. We've got private Facebook group. We've got a very active YouTube channel. Certainly a lot more information about me, personal stuff, a little bit about our investments and our apartments. So freelandventures.com.
Great. And this is Josh Cantwell from Freeland Ventures. And thank you, Josh, for everything that you do.
Thanks so much, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Business Legacy Show. If you're a thoughtful business owner who would like to be a guest on this program, please visit businesslegacypodcast.com/guest. That's businesslegacypodcast.com/guest. Now, if you got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you do that, tag us with #BusinessLegacyPodcast. Again, #BusinessLegacyPodcast. Each month, we scour Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. We pick one winner from each platform, and you get crowned king or queen of that social media. What do you win? We're going to promote you and your business to our audience of over 150,000 people totally free. Now, can you hook us up in your podcast player right now? Please give us a thumbs up or a rating and a review. We promise to read it all and take action. We believe that a person's legacy is the most important thing someone can leave the next generation, and your feedback helps us fulfill our mission. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button. You know why? Because every week for 15 minutes, you are going to be inspired and motivated to leave a lasting and meaningful legacy. My name is Chris Womerding. Let's connect on the socials. You'll find all the stuff we're doing at businesslegacypodcast.com. Again, businesslegacypodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being part of the Business Legacy Movement.